Please, it's too much winning. We can't take it anymore. Mr. President, it's too much. And I'll say, no, it isn't. We have to keep winning. We have to win more.
You fought in the Clone Wars?
Yes. I was once a Jedi Knight, the same as your father.
Johnny, what's the difference between us and them?
Because we live here.
Life moves pretty fast. You don't stop and look around once in a while, you could miss it.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, brothers and sisters, to the New Adventures of the Mountain Pass podcast. This is your host, as always, TJ Martinell, coming to you from my war room in my Fortress Americana in the heart of Cascadia. The date is August 4th, 2022, another 15 days to flatten the curve here in the great state of Washington under the authoritarian rule of Governor Jay Inslee. It is 6 o'clock in the morning because I got up extra early because that is how I roll here. I could be doing a lot of things right now. I could be studying for my NASM exam, which is the physical personal trainer stuff. I could be reading more of Solomon Kane, which is a good collection of short stories. I could be writing my own collection of pulp stories for one of my dystopian novels, The Pilgrim's Digress, that you can pick up on Amazon. I could be doing a lot of different things. I could also be doing my morning push-ups. Instead, I'm drinking coffee, that Folgers coffee, because I'm a cheapskate. Actually, no, I got it for free, so I'm not complaining. But I am choosing to sit here and drink Folgers coffee and record this podcast for you, my dear listeners. Like I said a while ago, I really just took a break because I didn't really know. I'm not going to record podcasts if I don't feel like I got that the pep in the step. I don't feel like I got that edge. Got to keep me on my toes where I got to be. I heard they're coming out with a Heat too, but that's not what we're going to be talking about in this podcast episode. This is the What's on the Menu episode. And I was inspired to do this because I haven't really talked too much about the book, I believe. I may have mentioned it in passing. Aaron Clary, my buddy, CaptainCapitalism.blogspot.com, he came out with his latest book, which was called The Menu, which I edited. And it's been really fascinating to see the response from certain peoples on the internetsies. I remember there was some guy who was talking about the problems with men and women dating, and I sent him a link to the book and said, your buddy, young man, might want to read this. And he proceeded to start arguing over the premise. So let's go over the premise. The premise of the book is essentially, and Aaron's looking at the data, he's looking at the statistics, he's looking at the forecasts, he's looking at the evidence, empirical evidence and data. That is showing that the vast majority, I won't say vast majority, but we're talking significant. We're talking like at least 40%, if not more, of women between the ages of 20 and 40 are going to be single within the next couple of years. Like there's going to be a massive amount of single women. Now, since we aren't a polygamous society, that also means that an equally number of men are also going to be single. So you're going to have a massive amount of men and women who are single. And he goes through the reasons why that is. At least his argument for why that is. And then he comes up with solutions for what to do about it. And what I found funny is a lot of people's objections so far to the book that I've encountered are literally addressed in the introduction of the book, which is do not complain about what's on the menu. You know, he's making it very clear. This is not a book that's intended to benefit society. It's not this is not a humanitarian book. This is a very, he uses the word Machiavellian, which is actually appropriate because Machiavelli didn't write, I believe, to be, he wasn't trying to be cold-hearted and calculating. He was trying to be pragmatic about how to rule in a society that was, frankly, just in chaos. I mean, Italy, the city states, there was a lot of violence. There was a lot of political instability. So he was writing about how a pragmatic leader would look at the situation, not how an idealistic leader would look at the situation. So Aaron Clary is not writing an idealistic book. He's not writing a book about how society should be. This is not utopia. He's looking at, it's like, you know, he's writing a book to guys who are about to go storm the beaches of Normandy and saying, hey, there's probably going to be a significant casualty rate. A good chunk of you in the initial wave are not going to make it back. So here's what you should do on your final night before. You should gamble and you can smoke all the cigarettes that you want and drink. You know, don't drink too much because you don't want to feel crappy on your last day. You know, that's the kind of book he's written. But it hinges on this premise that a lot of the people reading the book are never going to get married or have kids. And and so the guy, of course, who's arguing about this with me online reveals that he is, in fact, married with kids and he's older. So I'm thinking, okay, so it's not your... And this is the classic part that I keep encountering with people where they take a macro problem and they personalize it. And they go, well, it's not a problem for me, which is, you know, the lack of self-awareness that is necessary for you to engage in that. For example, I'm in very good physical condition. I go to the gym almost every day. My body fat is probably 10 to 11%, maybe 12. I don't have to be suffering from obesity to know that obesity is a massive problem because I'm not freaking blind. I can look around me and see fat people everywhere. I can see young people who are fat. I don't have to be personally suffering. Like, I've never been divorced. I don't need to have been through divorce to know that divorce is a problem or a frequently occurring thing. I have no kids in school, but I know what goes on in the education system because I'm not retarded. The myopic view that people have just blows my mind. So Aaron ended up doing an interview with Adam Piggott over at Pushing Rubber Downhill. He also hosted also by the great one over at the Cynical Libertarian Society that you can go to. And I had nothing to do with the title of the episode. I feel like a lot of people are going to get hung up on that, or they're just going to get hung up on the content and substance and style of some of these discussions. So I'm not going to do that. What I am going to do is talk about what was actually discussed in the podcast, because I want to, it's going to help springboard into what I want to talk about. So Adam was, by the way, he's written two books that you should buy, Pushing Rubber Downhill, about his whitewater rafting adventures in Uganda. And then there's Run Guts, Pull Cones, which is about him in the Italian Alps. Both are good books. They're true stories. They're not fiction, unlike most of my books, which are, you know, I make that stuff up. This is not stuff that I assume Adam did not make up. The first part of Pushing Rubber Downhill was pretty crazy. I was reading. I was like, wow. It involved a motorcycle, and I have a motorcycle, so I was just thinking, man, that took guts. Anyways, so they're doing they're interviewing Aaron, and Adam is not really liking the book's premise. Or at least the arguments laid out in the book, and Aaron's defending the book. And my favorite part of it was when Adam just asks, is it really that bad? And I'm listening to it, and me, Aaron, and the Great One all at the same time say, yes. And mind you, I'm not on the podcast. I was not part of the recording, but I like simultaneously, we all go, yes, like, yes. Because Adam, I think, has been in Saudi Arabia. I follow his blog. You should follow his blog, too. He has his own unique insights and his own unique perspective on stuff that I just find, you know, even if you don't agree with it all the time, it's just worth it helps you keep things in perspective, or helps you keep your mind open to other ideas on stuff. I have a very wide and diverse range of blogs that I read, and people that I listen to, commentators of all different sides of the spectrum. But anyways, yeah, he's been in Saudi Arabia for like a year or something like that, but he's also just not been, he's visited the United States. I think he was in Louisiana to hang out with Aaron and some others, but he's also not been on the dating market for a long time. So I found it interesting and funny, because it's like, yes, it is that bad. And I think one of the other problems for men who are going to read this book and get upset, I'll say what I would actually disagree with Aaron, because there's two different parts of Aaron's book. The first part of the book is him diagnose making an observation or a conclusion about what is going to be. He's talking about, you know, the fact that a lot of men and women in my generation are going to end up single, alone, and childless, and here's your solutions for it. So that's one argument. The second thing he's doing is he's saying, here's what men and women can do about it. So there's two different parts of the book that you can disagree with. I don't disagree with the premise. If I'm going to disagree with anything, it's not even going to be about what the men should do. It should be about the fact that he wrote about what women should do. Because this is, I just have to ask the question, and maybe he just did it for the giggles or the lulls or the whatevers. How many women are going to read this book and actually take some of the stuff to heart? Now, there might be, a handful of clients. I know that he has female clients who are trying to, they have self-awareness about what's going on and they're trying to get out of that kind of stuff. But I don't think any women are going to read Aaron's book and walk away and make changes to their lives, or at least, because here's the thing. This is the difference where, I guess, where I feel like everybody continually misses it. We assume that men and women are both equally either in control or not in control of their circumstances as far as dating, relationships, marriage, and children. No, the men have no say and the men have no power. It's the women who have the power to change. If a woman wants to get married, she can make it happen. If a woman wants to, let's say a woman read Aaron's book. Actually, let's go into this. I'll give an example. So, and the reason I say that is because he starts the book out talking about a guy named Fred who is a friend of his, and he committed suicide before he was even 35, my age. And I'm reading, I might as well read it. This is the intro to the book where he's talking about Fred. Fred was a highly successful young man in a very lucrative field. He never confessed to me how much he made, but he had to be pulling in at least $200,000 a year. He had recently completed his master's, which would have only earned him more, and he was the epitome of a ladies' man, tall, dark, jacked, and handsome. He surmounted the two largest hurdles any young man faces in life, money and women, and with most of his life in front of him, anyone who knew him was happily envious of the life he would lead. Actually, we'll stop for a second. This is something I wasn't even going to say, but it just came to mind. I've made this observation before. Do not envy anyone. Do not idealize anyone. And this is an example of why. Guys, I'm not making $200,000 a year. I'm not making it. If I was making $200,000 a year, I would be, it would solve several problems. One, I'd be able to do a lot more of the stuff that I want to do that I can't do until I start making more money, or at least making that much money. But this is a guy who is, like Aaron's talking about, he's got everything going on, and yet everything wasn't right. And it was to the point where he felt like he didn't want to live anymore. Now we can, I'm not trying to psychoanalyze a guy after the grave, because who knows what other things are going on in his life to the point where he's, where he feels like, that life is not worth living. And what he's talking about is, Aaron goes on to talk about the fact that this guy, he's pulling a lot of young girls in, as far as dating, but he's dissatisfied with them. And so I'm sure, yes, he could have married some of these gals, but I don't know if any of them wanted him to get married or were pressuring him into getting married. I don't know if any of them were. I think that if the answer was yes, it would have required him to change his behavior in a way that would have fundamentally altered who he was. And I'm going to say why. I'm going to actually read it from here. So Fred checked all the boxes. I'm reading from Aaron's book. Fred checked all the boxes a young man alive in America could check. Tall, good-looking, great physique, super intelligent, an exceptional career, good finances, and a steady supply of pretty 20-something girls. But out of all the girls, I can't remember him mentioning one of them as being wife material or long-term girlfriend potential. He dated 1 year ago, but she went on to become an equally successful professional woman. Okay. Yeah, I was just reading more of it to make sure I wasn't missing anything. So that's kind of what I'm talking about there, is there is a total mishmash of, or not mishmash, there's a total, it's like you're a company that needs a, I'll give an example, we're going to get a little nerdy here, James Bond wise. So The Man with the Golden Gun, not the greatest Bond movie ever, but when they were doing production of it, one of the producers randomly ordered hundreds, or if not thousands, of elephant shoes. Because he, for some reason, thought that there was going to be a stampede scene in this Bond movie because it was taking place in Bangkok. And so the other producer is, you know, shows up on the set one day and there are boxes and boxes and boxes of elephant shoes. And he's like, what are we supposed to do with all these elephant shoes and why are they here? And you might be wondering, what does that have to do with this? It's what you need is not what's being delivered. Like the equally successful professional woman. Right. She was not raised to be a mother or wife. She was raised to be a career woman. She's not. So she is not going to change who she is for him. And he's not going to change who he is for her. And she wouldn't want him if he changed. Right, there's nothing that Fred, I'd say, could have done. I think that that's the question I would ask people is, what would they think that Fred could have done differently? It's an open-ended question. I think it's something for people to just think about, if possible, if people are capable of contemplating. Because that's the argument that I'm making is, men can only do so much and improve themselves so much and make so much of themselves, but ultimately what they want isn't on the menu. And I would even argue that what they need, like men of Fred's type, where he's looking for a woman who's going to make a good mother and a good wife, the women that probably otherwise would have done that are not available, or they've been snatched up. I think are there women out there that are like that? Yes, they get snatched up pretty quickly because they're looking to get married. Like that is the focus of their life, is to get married. I've met several of these girls. I've known them. They didn't stay on the dating market for very long because their objective was to get off the dating market, and that was their focus. Their focus wasn't on other things. You know, that was an example of where the person had been properly raised to match and complement the type of man that she was looking for. See, this is where we're going to get into it, is there's what women want from a man, and there's what men want from women. There's also what women need from men, and there's what men need from women. And our society has created a complete distortion of the dating market and the marriage market, because they've raised men who are to be unattractive to women, and they've raised women to be in ways that are not attractive to the type of man. Maybe let's be nuanced with this. I'm trying to think of how to stack this all. Men are being raised to not be attractive to the type of women that they want, and women are being raised to be unattractive to the type of men that they want. So the women are pursuing men who aren't interested in them, as far as we're talking marriage, you know, being in a long-term relationship. And the men that are pursuing the women are not seen as attractive. Right? There's this just total confusion about, like, and also expectations and all this other kind of stuff. But, you know, it goes back to, this is all being set, how could I put it? The men don't get to dictate any of the terms of the interactions. So getting, like, if people have a problem with Aaron's book, they could discuss, you know, for example, say, well, here's how you can be in the top. If you're going to be idealistically pragmatic, you'd write a book saying, you know, a survivor's guide to dating and marriage in the 21st century, and say, there's a very good chance that you're not going to get married or have kids, but here's what you do if you want to improve your odds. I mean, that's what you do. But Aaron's writing a book that's more appealing, or not appealing, but he's writing to the average guy. So this is, and this is where I kind of my take comes in is that people can get upset with the observations that Aaron's making in his book. It doesn't change reality. And no, guys, there is no turning this ship around. This ship has already hit the iceberg. You know, like Aaron's book is the equivalent of how to make a boat out of deck chairs. Most of you are going to, you know, it's that kind of a book. You can disagree, and you know, you can disagree with some of the recommendations that he makes, and you can not like what's on the menu. It's like going to an Italian joint and wondering where the Thai pad is, or pad Thai. No, of course, I could go into the various reasons for why, you know, I've just described, like, men are raised to act like women, or they're trained and raised to be feminine in how they express themselves, and the women are trained to be express themselves in traditionally masculine ways, which, and yet the women want men still and get frustrated because the men are acting like women. And the problem with that is, I would say, is that if you want a man, you got to be a woman. And if you're a man, we can chastise men as much. I take men to task as much as possible on this kind of stuff. But I'd say if you want a woman, you're going to have to act like a man. But at the same time, being a man is not going to change the women around you. And but I'd say this, though, if you're a woman who wants to get married, chances are, well, the question is, what are you looking for? Like, what are your expectations? This is where the men and women have two different challenges as far as if they wanted to get married or date or whatever, because there's so much chaos. It is the Wild West out there. You have no idea what's considered normal for the other person. Their expectations of what the relationship's going to look like. There's what people say and then what they actually do or what they actually want. This is where we really just come to the back to, I think I did a podcast on this a while ago where I just said, look, if how can I put this? Because there's so many different angles of looking at this. But I, you know, Dalrock, that blogger, he used to write about dating and marriage over at his website before he quit. And I think that this is why he quit. He quit because he just was looking at the situation saying, there is no turning this around. There is no point. You know, he used to write about the number of single women piling up statistically and how that might lead to a panic in the market where suddenly they start getting married. And I think he started looking at the data as Aaron has and realized, it's just going to continue to get more and more of the population. There's not going to be any panic where suddenly they're all like, we got to settle down and find someone. Now, that panic may be occurring at an age, but the thing is, at that point, what they're looking for in a man, they can't find. You know, they're looking for a guy who's, you know, they're in their 30s, they're in their late 30s, and they're looking for a guy who's older than them, who's making more money than them, and that guy doesn't exist. Statistically speaking, he's either not on the market or he's on the market and he's not making enough money. I mean, that's an example of that is the number of women who are going to college now. It's like 60% of college students are women and 40% are men. And women want to marry men who have college degrees and are better educated and make more money. That's just, that is a trend, a statistic. It's an observable trend in preference of women. Well, how is that going to work out? I mean, no, it's funny how nobody seems to have thought over the last 20 years of, empowering women and sending them into the workforce and sending them into all these different sectors where they now dwarf men in terms of representation, you know, an example of that is the corporate, what I call the corporate convents now. It's fascinating because they never seem to have thought, at least I'd say the people who assumed that marriage would be would come around at some point, is how exactly was that supposed to work? It only works when you're the exception of the rule. But everybody, I think I did a podcast on this discussing one of the dysfunctions of our society. Everyone seems to think that they're the exception to the rule, that the rules just, that reality just doesn't apply to them. And actually, I think that that's another thing where people run into when they're reading Aaron's book, is they think that Aaron is dictating reality by his words. There's, and I'm not saying this of Adam, I'm just saying this of people that I've discussed this book with, where they start arguing over it, and it's like, you act as if Aaron has written and dictated reality in the future, or he's projecting his own desires onto the future. I don't understand that mindset. That to me is borderline narcissistic. This idea that the words you speak dictate what's going to happen or the way things are, and so you have to argue with what someone's saying and prevent them from speaking it and prevent them from thinking it, because if they can think it, they can speak it. If they speak it, it is reality. You know, and I'm not going back to Fred, who's in Aaron's book. I have to wonder if there was more to the story. It would all be speculation. I think one of the things, though, my guess is his expectations of what life was going to be like and what it actually was so different that it just was incredibly demoralizing. It is all speculation. I have no idea. But the thing is, if people are wanting to change the situation, you need to talk. One, don't even. You'd have to change women's behavior. The reason why a lot of men aren't acting like men, they're not cultivating their masculinity, they're not working on being a man, is because they could just point at Fred. Like, what is the end goal? And this is where I'd actually make a point, you know, my conclusion from the book, my thoughts to you, my dear listeners, who might be in the same predicament, not necessarily the same predicament as Fred. If you are making $200,000 a year, I can't say that you're in a financial predicament, but if you're a bachelor, bachelorette, but how many bachelorettes are listening to this podcast? You've got to find another reason for existence other than being a parent and a spouse, being a father and a husband. You're going to have to find something else. You know, you can throw your line in the water and see if you catch a snag of fish, to use the expression, but you can't put your reason for existence on that. And I don't know, again, if that was Fred's problem. We it's all speculation, like I've been saying. But yeah, that's kind of doing. It was actually a really good example or a good anecdote for Aaron to start the book off with, because if this guy's struggling to find a woman that he wants to marry, you know, what is the average guy going to do? And this is, again, where we run into a problem where people confuse dating with marriage. You know, I'm sure Fred was finding tons of women who were good for short-term relationships, or they were just fun to be around, but they lacked the qualities necessary to be in a long-term relationship and a permanent relationship. We have an entire generation of men and women who have cultivated traits and characteristics that are not attractive are not conducive to attracting and keeping the opposite sex. And yet they think that, you know, how many men out there think that being nice to a girl is going to get them to like them? And then they find out that that's not the case. Or women are confused about the type of men that they see as being good relationship material, and he turns out to be not, again and again and again and again and again. You know, one is chasing the other while the other's chasing someone else. I mean, that's what I'm observing, and I've been observing for years, is there's this, like, this line. It's almost a hierarchy of who's chasing who. And if you understand how it works, you understand that if you're chasing someone, let's say that's part of the problem. Like, if you want to know the problem is if you're chasing someone, you're part of this vicious cycle of what passes for the dating world. And yes, there is a difference between chasing and pursuing. So yeah, if you haven't read the book, it's not a long book. It's only like 38,000 words. It's and you don't have to agree with everything, you know, that Aaron says, but he's helping to set expectations accordingly. And if he happens to be wrong, what's the harm? I guess that this is where I'm guessing that some people, it's an unspoken belief that there are men out there who have opportunities to get married, settle down, have a family, and Aaron is basically convincing them with his book to reject these women, and just go be a bachelor for the rest of their life. I mean, that's not what's going on here. I don't think there's a single person who's been I cannot believe for an instant that guys like Aaron Clary have managed to demoralize a man who has met a marriable girl from getting married. I don't even think they've could. There's probably more likely than not men that they have not, they've failed to convince who shouldn't be getting married because the gal has got problems or it's going to end in divorce. That's probably the bigger issue, is men getting married to women who are not, and you know, women getting married to men who are not relationship material either, but we don't have any influence over what they do. I mean, this is the difference between the sections of the internet where men are talking to men about what they should do and women are talking to women about what they should do. And fundamentally, there's going to be tension and conflict between the two sides because their dating and marriage strategies are at odds with each other. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. It's just, you know, women don't want to let men know all about, you know, what women find attractive because they want men to figure it out for themselves. But also, it's like someone it's almost like the United States government revealing top secret technology about their weapon systems to the Chinese, you know, like in a way. If someone's interested in reading this book, I don't think there's anybody who's going to read this book or books like this and go from being very hopeful and seeing a world that's full of just opportunity for healthy dating and marriage and say, I'm totally convinced by this book, even though reality everything around me says that this book is not true. You know, this is like Aaron writing a book about how you shouldn't own motorcycles and how motorcycles aren't cool and nobody likes them. And some kid, you know, decides not to buy a motorcycle as a result of this. You can go, I challenge you, go write that book. Go write a book about how motorcycles aren't cool and they're not masculine and women do not find them, you know, sexy at all. Like, please, by all means, go write that book and see how many people, you know, how many people leave good reviews, how many people say that it confirms what they've observed in reality and in their own lives and providing anecdotes and all that kind of stuff. It's not going to happen. And this is, I guess, the part of the book that I appreciate for when I was reading it and editing it for Aaron, is that Aaron is willing to just call it for what it is. And people might see it as being not exploitative, but where he's not trying to help men and women get on in this book necessarily. It sounds very defeatist, I guess, is what people would argue it is. And I'd say if people have a solution, by all means, write that book. But just understand, you're going to have to get the women to listen in, because they're the ones who basically dictate by their actions everything. Like, if they decide tomorrow that there's only certain types of men who are going to get access to attractive women, men would change their behavior accordingly. If women didn't find motorcycles attractive, I would still be buying a bike because I think they're cool, but that doesn't mean that women that I've encountered don't find them sexy or the rider. But let's say, like, women only wanted to date or, you know, pursue certain types of men, and then they changed their preferences, men would adapt accordingly. So, I'm not going to ramble anymore. I think I've made my point. So, yeah, if you haven't bought the book, check it out on Amazon. You are smart. If you're listening to this podcast, you are probably some of the smartest people on the planet. You can look it up, just like you can look up all my books at tjmartinell.com. So, thank you for listening to this episode of the New Adventures of the Mountain Pass podcast. This is your host, TJ Martinell, coming to you from my war room in my Fortress Americana in the heart of Cascadia, signing off.